You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. Monroe County Court appointed special advocates stand up for children's interest in court. We'll hear more about the program and an upcoming CASA training in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware, tips you off to three new scams and how you can avoid them. But first, your daily headlines.
Kilroy's on Kirkwood gets to keep its liquor license a little longer. In its meeting today, the Monroe County Alcoholic Beverage Board postponed a vote on renewing Kilroy's liquor license due to a lack of a quorum. Board member Dave O'Gwin, who is Dean of Students at Indiana University, recused himself today, saying he needed to be, quote, beyond reproach, unquote. The IU Foundation owns the building that houses Kilroy's. A second board member was absent. The Alcoholic Beverage Board heard from concerned community members in May who asked the board not to renew Kilroy's alcohol license. Concerned residents pointed to the high number of police runs to the bar and Kilroy's advertising that flaunted underage drinkers and advocated blackout drinking. At its June meeting, the three-member board did not have enough voting members present to vote on renewing the liquor license. Today, the board again postponed the decision to its August 7th meeting for the same reason. Last year, the alcohol board voted 2-1 to renew Kilroy's alcohol license, but only for 1 year. Attorney and alcohol board member Catherine Lyle told WFHB three factors go into the board's decision: whether the business is of good moral character, whether the business is a public nuisance, and whether any criminal offenses have taken place on the premises. In 2018, Lyle voted against renewing Kilroy's license for the usual 2-year term. She deemed the bar a public nuisance, citing around 100 police runs to the bar that year.
South Bend Mayor and 2020 presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg is introducing a plan to expand national service networks. Members would serve in new programs like a Climate Corps, as well as existing programs like AmeriCorps. According to Buttigieg, campaign website, the current acceptance rate into the AmeriCorps plan is 13%. Buttigieg's plan would expand the number of opportunities available to make the plan less selective. AmeriCorps, in its current form, accepts 75,000 people each year. Buttigieg's plan is to draw 1 million service members to these programs by 2026.
The Indiana State Department of Health warns that they have found mosquitoes testing positive for West Nile virus in 4 Indiana counties. State health officials found the infected mosquitoes in Elkhart, Clark, Marion, and Hamilton counties. The State Department of Health said in a press release that no humans have tested positive for the virus so far this year. 35 people tested positive for the virus last year. Health officials warned the risk of West Nile virus is increasing statewide, and they encourage residents across the state to reduce their exposure to mosquitoes. Residents are advised to avoid the outdoors during late afternoon, early morning, and from dusk to dawn when mosquitoes are most active. Residents going outside should wear insect repellent. Residents should also take steps to eliminate places attractive to mosquitoes around the home. This would include old containers holding water, clogged roof gutters, and tall grass. Residents experiencing the flu-like symptoms of West Nile virus or West Nile fever should see a healthcare professional.
Following a recent federal court decision, the 2020 census will not include a citizenship question. For WFHB News, Macy Evans reports.
The Census Bureau is printing 2020 census forms without the Trump administration's citizenship question following a Supreme Court opinion. The Supreme Court blocked the citizenship question on Thursday. ACLU managing attorney for the Voting Rights Project, Sarah Brannon, says she agrees with the Supreme Court's judgment.
In a decision today that's a little bit complicated, but five of the justices came together and issued the essential part of the ruling, which is that the Trump administration's efforts at the citizenship question have now been blocked. The Supreme Court agreed that the administration's stated reason for adding a citizenship question was contrived. The Trump administration had put forth that the reason for adding a citizenship question was to help with Voting Rights Act enforcement. And the Supreme Court today, in a ruling written by Chief Justice Roberts, said that it was a contrived reason and that there was a little disconnect between the stated decision and the explanation given, and that the court could not abide accepting a contrived reason.
Officials in the Trump administration confirmed Tuesday that the question would not be on the census. The Census Bureau says they are currently printing the census forms without the question. President Donald Trump tweeted this morning that he plans on moving forward with the citizenship question, calling reports stating otherwise fake. ACLU Voting Rights Project staff attorney Kura Dwincherry says because the court's decision came days before the July 1st printing deadline, she sees no way for the president to move forward as he claims.
From our perspective, this is over. The court ruled today. The Census Bureau has repeatedly said that these forms need to be printed next week. So we really don't see a timeline on which this could be revisited. Our view is the court spoke and the Census Bureau needs to start printing.
The state of Indiana receives almost $18 billion from the federal government based on census data collected every 10 years. That number could shift based on population changes documented by the 2020 census. More responses to the census mean more funding for the state. Public programs like Medicaid, school lunches, and infrastructure rely upon this funding. Political districts and congressional seats are also determined by census results. John C. Yang, director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, says the census is more important than partisan politics.
The census is too important. Political representation is at stake. Funding for schools, roads, and hospitals is at stake. Our democracy demands a fair and accurate census, and we will continue to ensure that that happens. And that continuity will include continuing to fight in court if necessary.
Residents will be able to fill out the census online for the first time this year. Paper censuses will be available to those who request them. For WFHB, I'm Macy Evans.
Duke Energy is seeking a 15% rate increase. If approved by the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, the increase will come in two steps. Rates could rise 13% in mid-2020. Then rise another 2% in 2021. The rate increase is estimated to bring Duke an additional $395 million annually, which it says it will invest in its grid to improve reliability and reduce emissions.
Bloomington Transit and BT Access will not operate tomorrow, July 4th. The transit center will be closed. Service will resume on Friday, July 5th.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Indiana is fourth in the nation when it comes to the number of children placed in child protective care, according to an independent report by the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group. The Indiana Department of Child Services, or DCS, has reported a dramatic increase in the number of children in their custody over the past few years. Experts say a major driver of that increase is the ongoing opioid epidemic. As parents are affected by the opioid crisis, the number of children being neglected or abused has increased. Monroe County Court-Appointed Special Advocates, or CASA, represents the interests of those children in court. CASA says that for years, the agency lacked volunteer advocates, and the wait list of children needing support continued to grow. That is, until community members stepped up to serve as advocates. But as CASA volunteer Jim Shelton tells WFHB's Sarah Vaughn, that support doesn't mean that CASA is out of the woods.
Can we start by having you explain what CASA does and what a CASA volunteer is?
Sure. CASA is short for Court-Appointed Special Advocate, and they are volunteers who are recruited by the CASA program and then trained by the CASA program professionals to serve assisting children as their advocates when they are in the juvenile justice system. So they've been removed from their parents because of their parents either abusing them or neglecting them. And the court is responsible for making decisions about them while the parents are hopefully getting in the position to be reunified with them. And the CASA volunteer serves as another eye and ear for the court. So we visit with the children, we visit with their service providers, we visit with the parents. We visit with DCS, the Department of Child Services, who's the agency of the state and the court that interacts with the children. And then we tell the court how things are going. CASA volunteer will write a report telling the court what's going on, making recommendations for should the children remain in the court system, should we still be aiming toward reunification, which is always the default, or should perhaps we be working toward adoption if the parents are not doing what they need to do to make the court feel safe and putting the children back with them. So we're another set of eyes and ears. We supplement what DCS is doing.
Now, in the spring of 2018, CASA had a wait list, a pretty large wait list, 126 children.
Right.
Due to a shortage of volunteers. But the community stepped up, right? Because by January 2019, that had changed?
That had changed dramatically. The community definitely stepped up. The state stepped up in helping come up with some seed money to try some different things. We got a number of people to take on more than one case. I've got two right now. I had three at one point. But we've got some people who've got, I believe, up to five. And those are called multiple case CASAs. And then we've had what I called CASA Lite, but Kristen got mad at me for saying that. But they're people who go visit with the children and let the CASA office know how things are going, but that's all they do. They don't have to go to court. They don't have to testify. They don't have to write reports. They just go see the kids once a month. And that, along with DCS, quite frankly, bringing far fewer cases, which worries us, but they're not bringing cases nearly as often. And so as a result of all those, and then we just recruited a bunch of volunteers. We've gone from about 100, well, it depends on how far back you go, but not long ago, we had about 100. Now we've got 148 CASAs.
Right.
As a result of all that, right now, we don't have a waiting list.
Now, does that mean you're safe? Do you think that will hold, or are you still looking for volunteers?
Oh, Judge Galvin has predicted the pendulum will swing back the other way. There will be some awful thing happen, I'm sorry to say, to some child, and then it'll swing back to where they are bringing more cases. And now how long that'll be, there's no telling. But in the interim, we still need people to volunteer to be CASAs because people move, get new jobs, get sick, have sick spouses, their circumstances change. And so we have fairly low turnover, but we still have pretty constant turnover. It's nothing like what service providers and DCS are seeing in terms of turnover. But still, we need more people to be training and to be ready to take cases as they come along. And half of us are retired, so we also age out, so to speak.
So in addition to being a CASA, there's also the possibility of volunteering as, I think you touched on this, as a child visit monitor.
Child visit monitor, and then we also need people to serve on some of our committees. About a third of our budget is raised by the board of directors and through grants. The other third is it comes through the court, the county budget through the court system. So we have some fundraising efforts that people can volunteer to help with, or they can even donate. That'd be wonderful. Or like I said, I'm on the community engagement committee, and then sometimes people volunteer just to help in the office. There's a lot of, increasingly it's not paperwork, it's digital work. We're using more and more electronic communications and statements, et cetera, from the courts. So there's very little real paper being moved around. But those electrons got to be moved around by somebody, and it takes quite a bit of time. So there's lots of opportunities to get involved and help indirectly if you don't feel your circumstances let you actually work with the children.
You've been a longtime CASA volunteer. This is not your typical volunteer gig, is it?
Well, no, it's not. And it's not for everybody. I'm always trying to get people to think about being a CASA. And one of the comments I hear back a lot is I just couldn't emotionally handle that. I just would have to, I'd want to take the kids home with me and just keep them to make sure they're okay. You know, and you can't get that involved. I know a very good friend of mine who's was on the board of directors and was saying that. And after she'd been on the board for a term, which I guess, I don't know if she did more than 3 years or not, she's now a CASA. But it can be emotionally difficult because you see, well, I'll tell you what Judge Galvin says. Judge Galvin says a new DCS employee, which is somewhat analogous to a CASA, will see more heartbreak and sadness in a year than a beat cop will see in their whole career. So, you got to keep your eye on the ball and know you're trying to make things better for the kid, and you probably aren't going to make it perfect. And if they get reunited, you'll be worried about, is it really going to work? But that's the job, is to do what you can to make it better, to make it the best it can be. And you have to keep that in mind when there are setbacks, and there'll be a lot of setbacks, because getting off drugs, get rid of an addiction is really hard. And so there'll be setbacks, and you just have to be tough to roll with them and deal with them. And keep in mind, you're going to make things better. Not perfect, but better. You know, you're an officer of the court, and you're trying to figure out and decide what's the best thing for this kid, for these children often. Should they be reunited with their parents? Is that going to be safe? Or should they be adopted?
I wanted to also give you an opportunity to talk about how rewarding it can be.
Oh, it is very rewarding. I remember I went to one of the commissioner's meetings the day after one of my children had just been adopted. The parents did not make things better at all, and the case went for 3 years. There was domestic violence involved, heavy drug use involved, lots of lying by the parents and deception by the parents. And finally, we were about to go to court, literally within, well, actually, we were late for starting the hearing that would have terminated their rights when they both were convinced by, I guess, their attorneys in the end that they had no chance and that they ought to voluntarily sign over adoption, and they did. So we had a wonderful ceremony, and it was, well, it brought tears to eyes. It was so wonderful. And it can be very rewarding like that. And I felt very wonderful when a set of parents was able finally to beat their addiction. They relapsed three times. So I had three technical cases because the case would be closed and then they would do it again. And that would open a new case. So I had three cases when it was just one family. But they were able to finally get their act together, which included not only getting off the stuff, but setting in place the support system they needed to deal with life without drugs. And they finally believed that, internalized it, and did it, and were reunited with their kids. And again, all I can say is knock on wood, because I have no contact with them anymore. I'm hoping that's been going on for several years now. So either outcome, when the kids get a permanent home, I find to be very, very gratifying.
So let's talk about some upcoming CASA events. You've got a volunteer training, Coffee with CASA.
Next training starts August the 8th and will run through the 29th. Applications are due July 25th. Somebody can go to monroecountycasa.org, click on the volunteer link, and then there'll be a number of links. There's one that's got frequently asked questions answered so that people can learn more about it. You can download or even fill out the application online, or you can download it, fill it out, and snail mail it in or drop it by. The trainings will be Monday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night from 5:30 to 8:30 for those 3 weeks. And they'll be in the CASA office, which is on Morton Street, right across from the entrance to the Morton Street Garage. People, because of the hour, you can park for free at the city and just park city parking lot, walk down the B-line for a block and a half. Now, the Coffee with CASA is next week, the 11th, at 7:30 at the CASA office. You can stop by, and there'll be some CASA there and some staff members there to answer questions and just talk about what it's like to be a CASA.
Thanks so very much for your time, Jim Shelton.
Sure. Thank you.
For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
That was Monroe County CASA volunteer Jim Shelton speaking with WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar-powered generation systems that encourage independent and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Three is a dangerous number right now because there are three new scams out there, and you, or someone you love, may well be hit by at least one of them. First, people here in Indiana have been getting phone calls from someone pretending to be the service provider for their phone, internet, or cable TV. The caller gives you a song and dance about a great new deal that will lower your monthly payment, and then says it's a partnership with another company, like eBay, for instance, and you have to pay a fee up front using one of the partner company's gift cards. Anybody that wants you to pay with a prepaid money card or by wire transfer of cash is a swindler. You should know that by now. Make sure your friends do. Next, there's a new wrinkle in Medicare fraud, the genetic testing scam. Medicare will now cover genetic testing for certain conditions, and crooks have started targeting victims in the mail, on the phone, and on Facebook. They're offering a free cancer test, or something equally attractive, and working a double ripoff. They not only want to steal your Medicare and insurance information, they're billing Medicare for the cost of the testing. Last May, a fraudster in New Jersey was sentenced to prison for working this scam on a group of elderly people in low-income housing. The bottom line? Don't do any genetic testing unless your doctor says to, and do it the way your doctor recommends. Anybody that offers you free testing and then wants your Medicare number or insurance info is not to be trusted. And finally, rats are eating away at computers all over the country, but they're not relatives of Mickey Mouse. In cyberspace, a rat is a remote action Trojan virus, and it's even scarier than any rodent. This kind of malware lets a hacker take control of your computer, and a new species of rat has just cropped up. It's called the Houdini worm, and it aims to get your bank account information. Once the bad guys have that info, they can make purchases online with the money in your account, or even just steal your money directly. The most common way scammers trick you into installing the Houdini worm is a fake email or text message that appears to come from your bank. You're asked to confirm your identity or finish a transaction and given a link to click. Don't fall for it. Clicking that link lets a rat loose in your device. Some banks really do send customers emails or texts about banking issues or transactions, but play it safe. If you get any message like that, don't click links. Instead, check with your bank by phone or on their secure website and make sure what you got really came from them. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Macy Evans and Sarah Vaughn. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdane, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmatke. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned now for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.